deep in London's beating heart lies a wall. How lucky do it be if you know the call? For if the wall steps aside, be not afraid of what you see, 'cause the wizard world is opened up, as has the Gryffindor.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Shriekcast, no longer a Harry Potter reread podcast for lapsed fans. I'm your host, Cece.
And I'm Liz.
And Liz, I am coming to you from the new stew.
Nice. How is it? How's it feel?
It's very echoey. I moved to a new apartment, and that's great. It's really lovely, but I definitely need to put some stuff on the walls because it's very, very echoey in here right now.
Yeah, yeah. Are you kind of speaking a little quieter to keep the echoes down?
It's a lovely place, and I sort of jumped on it because I was like, wow, this at this price point, this size, this is perfect for me. And I didn't really stop to consider that having really high ceilings, which this place does, might be sort of a problem for recording podcasts.
Sure.
So I'm gonna experiment. I did buy like a cheap little like foam, like audio foam enclosure thing for the microphone, thinking that would work. And it probably would, but it was designed for microphones that you speak into the side of, and I have a microphone that you speak into the top of. So I am going through a little comedy of errors here.
Sure.
Trying to get my audio treatment set up. So please excuse the probably booming echo that you might be able to hear in your headphones on this one. I am in a box. I'm in a big white box right now.
Just pretend you're in the Hunger Games arena.
They're making a Jabberjay that says shit that I say. I'm just trying to think of like anything exciting to share about like the most horrible process that everyone hates doing.
It is maybe one of the worst tasks.
What was it like when you moved into your house? Because that was,
oh my gosh, well ago, I right? mean it is surreal to me because it was 2020. It was just 4 years ago. So it was 2020, and so everything was shut down. And we couldn't have anyone help us move. So it was sort of a solo show.
God.
It's surreal thinking back on it, because one, I was drinking way too much White Claw at the time. Everyone was. Everyone was in 2020.
That's right.
It was too much White Claw, and I have this like sense memory of drinking like one of those like extra like a tall boy lemon White Claw and packing, and it was like 1 a.m. and I like had to work the next day, and I was watching Tiger King. It's horrible. Horrible memory looking back on. That was the thing of the moment. So that was a vibe for sure. Yeah.
That is a potent memory.
It was a tough time for everyone.
I had a funny experience getting, I mentioned the couch that I built. I got it from IKEA, and I was like, okay, well, I'm on the second floor and there's no elevator, so I am not getting a full-size couch up there, and it's a studio, so I should get a love seat. Go to IKEA, pick out a love seat, and it's like, ooh, this one's comfy, it's fairly attractive, and it's costs like $400 less than the full size one. Easy, sure. Easy choice. And this is nobody's fault but my own. I'm really stupid for even thinking this. I was like, I know that you build most furniture at IKEA, but that's because it like it's all like flat panels of wood. They're not gonna make you build the couch. They'll just, because it's one that you have to go pick up at the warehouse across from the IKEA. It's not one that you can just like go pick up the box for in the warehouse.
Right, yeah.
So I'm like, cool, I'll get everything else I need. It's all flat packs. I'm getting a desk and like a bed frame and whatnot. And then I will go drive the U-Haul over and get the couch get the love seat. And it'll be really easy. And it'll, you know, I'll just flip it upside down and kind of drag it up the stairs. And that'll be fine. Easy. Get there. They roll out this gigantic fucking box, like massive, massive box. And I was like, oh, shit. And then I realized that there were pieces in there and I would have to build it. So that was already a nightmare.
Yeah.
I was like, oh God, how complicated is that going to be? Get the U-Haul to the apartment complex and realize that like this box is too big. It is too big to like put on a cart, like a hand cart. It is too heavy to carry. So I like walked it, you know, like stood it on its end and like went like bump, 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 like rolling it on its corners all the way to the door, push it all the way up the first flight of stairs to the landing. And then I was like, this is not fucking this is crazy. This is not working. Opened it. I opened the box and like carried all the individual pieces up to my apartment.
Oh no. Which was like
just going back and forth. And so I was like, oh God, whatever. What a nightmare. And then when I got it in there, I was like, wait, these pieces are fucking huge. And then it hit me that they had given me the wrong couch.
Oh no.
They gave me the big one. They gave me the big sofa. And at that point, I was like, well, I'm sure as shit not taking it back down.
No, no.
I'd have to like put it back in this box that I had like already like pulled apart to like get all the pieces. So I was like, fuck it. I'll put it together. Hopefully it fits. Thank God. But miracle. It does. It does fit. It's actually a pretty good size for this new apartment. So I do have a real ass giant couch, which is very comfy and also like long enough for someone to like crash on, you know, like mm-hmm. It's a real real long sofa. I can lie on the couch and watch TV now. Okay, so that part's good, but like a bitter reward for a nightmare's amount of work. Just really, really really nightmarish experience getting this sofa up here.
That's just $400 right in your pocket, though.
That is true. I hope that IKEA doesn't come a call and go, I'm like, hey, actually, our records show that you bought this thing and we gave you this thing. Bring it back, because I'm gonna tell them no.
Prove it.
It's mine.
Prove it.
Yeah, prove it. It's mine now. I built it.
Do you like going to IKEA? Because, you know, some people really like going there because there's like it's like a whole experience, kind of.
I kind of do, honestly.
Oh, okay.
Hey, do you hate IKEA?
I just hate the store. That's my thing. I never like graduated beyond the like 10-year-old child. I hate going to the store. Mom and dad are making me go to the store and I hate it. It's so boring. Mm-hmm. And so I still like exist in that space of just mm-hmm. like, no, I don't want to go to IKEA. It's boring in there.
I don't know. Like I'll get some meatballs. They have like the lingonberry slush. That's pretty good.
Sure.
I'll buy like another lack, the little 4-leg table thing. So you can always use another one of those somewhere. I don't know. I like it, but I turned 50 when I turned 30, I think.
Mm-hmm.
In that I like going to the store. I got way into prog rock. I'm collecting watches. I just really became old. I'm old as fuck. Speaking of, I did move like within walking distance of a watch store, which is really fucking dangerous.
Uh-oh. Do they have good stuff at like a brick and mortar watch store? Because like what could they have that eBay doesn't have?
Moving's a whole fucking experience. Like, how many times did you, when you moved into your new house, did you like think you were done and then realize like, oh, I need a spatula? I didn't get trash bags, you know, that kind of thing.
A lot. Yeah. There's always more. And the thing is like the closer you get to being done, the more the 2% things that are left feel like the hardest thing you've ever done in your life. Getting that spatula is like the worst experience you'll ever have.
Yeah, because it feels good. Like it felt really good getting ready to move and like building a list and being like, okay, I can knock this all out in one trip. You know, I'm going to the store. I'm going to get this, and this, and then I'll be done. And then like a day later, be like, oh, I didn't, like for me, it was, I didn't have like a little thing to organize my cutlery. And so, like, going to the store to just get that, like a $4 piece of plastic, miserable. I gotta drive 10 minutes to get to the nearest Kohl's that has one of those to get just that. Horrible. Feels so bad.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the worst. Then I do revert back into I hate going to the store mode. If I'm just getting one thing, nightmare. I don't want that.
No.
Yeah, no. I've been very busy moving, which is why we haven't recorded in a bit. What have you been up to while I've been busy moving couches and whatnot?
What have I been doing? That's a great question. I mean, I've been continuing on with my strings group. I'm excited to report that there was no drama this week, which I have to say is what you would expect me to always say after my adult community strings group.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's good. Have things resolved, or is it just like... it hasn't, you know, bad things haven't come up yet.
Bad things haven't come up yet. To be continued, for sure.
Okay. Okay. So you haven't been apologized to or anything like that. Just
no. And it's not really, it's not, I wouldn't say anything has really happened that warrants an apology as much as a just like knock that shit off, please. Just don't keep putting me in this awkward situation. So, but other than that, that's good. I've been playing a lot of Star Wars: The Old Republic MMO. I have like re-rolled my character about three times now. Last time we spoke, I was playing the Jedi Consular, and now I'm playing an Imperial Agent because I heard that's the best like single player campaign, and it sure just seems to be.
That's the one I played, and I really remember enjoying it. Because you're just doing evil spy movie stuff. It's great.
Yeah, you are just doing a lot of evil stuff. But it's cool. It's incredible, like how considerably better it is from the other single player campaigns. And to be fair, I think the Jedi Consular is supposed to be the worst one. But it just might. It just was. I don't know. Maybe they started with the Imperial Agent one, and then they ran out of time as they kept going. But it is. Pretty high quality. So there's your little update from the dead MMO corner.
I want to say that the Imperial Agent one had, I think that one had either Josh Sawyer or what's his name, the other guy, the KOTOR 2 writer.
Oh, Chris Planescape Avalon. Writer.
Yes, yeah. I think that one got touched by either both or one of those two, or but so I remember that was the one that was the most sort of hyped up at the time. Mm-hmm. It's funny because when we were talking about the Sith Inquisitor one, you were talking about how just like it was so evil that it like wasn't fun, or it was just sort of like boring evil. Uh-huh. And when we were talking about that, I kind of came away from that conversation. I was like, but then again, my favorite one was the Imperial Agent. And I think that one just does such a better job of threading the needle of like, it knows you're playing a shitty guy story. Right.
Oh, totally.
And it just has a lot more fun with that. I think explores that in some like cleverer ways than the Sith one sounds like it did.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the kind of thing I mean when I say like, I like playing as a bad guy, you know, I love doing some just like crazy espionage stuff. That's always fun to me.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, God, I'm sorry that I don't have much to report. I've literally been like moving and building furniture for the past week. That's kind of been my whole life. And also, anytime I've been playing a video game, I've been playing Balatro.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've heard a lot about that.
Have you taken a look at that yet?
I have not.
I can't tell. I think you might like it. It's because you like... You like roguelikes, right? You like a roguelite?
Yeah, I've probably put more hours into Binding of Isaac than maybe any other game other than like World of Warcraft.
Yeah. Maybe that's a good comparison point, because I know that your love of Binding of Isaac was like always sort of in spite of like the aesthetic of that game.
Yes, 100%.
This game has a great aesthetic, but I don't know if it's like, because it is just like poker themed. It is casino themed. You're putting together flushes and straights and that kind of thing. So there's a little bit of like table game knowledge up front mm-hmm. that I don't know if it's like super appealing to you, but oh my god, it's such a good play in the background, have open in another tab type game.
Oh, nice. Is it like, because my game to do that with is Cookie Clicker, right? Mm-hmm. Would you put it on that kind of level of engagement where you could just kind of have it open? I mean, obviously it's like not running itself like Cookie Clicker does, but...
It's because it's more active than Cookie Clicker, but it's also in like stages because you're just playing one hand at a time
mm-hmm.
and there's nothing in real time. So like if you are, you know, in the middle of something and you're like, okay, I have this many cards in my hand, I have to score this many points. You can step away and think about it or you know, just stop in between rounds. It's very bite-sized, or you can just sit there playing it forever, which is what I also like to do, but it does work quite well as just a like, I'll just kind of like do a couple of runs throughout the day while I'm working on other stuff around the house type game.
Nice. Well, I will have to check that out.
Yeah. It's just like, it's funny. It's a deck building roguelike, just stripped down to like the barest, like the barest it could possibly be, just by like, because I don't know if many other deck builders have been built around just like actual deck of cards stuff, mm-hmm. right? Like this is like it's as much solitaire as it is Slay the Spire, right? Like,
Sounds great.
Yeah, that's been a lot of fun. But yeah, no, I've been busy moving, busy setting things straight in this new apartment. Anyway, in the midst of all this, I did find time to collapse on my comfy couch and finish reading Catching Fire.
Yeah, we did finish reading it.
We finished reading Catching Fire. This is not a two chapter episode. No, this is a 4-chapter episode. So we should probably get into it, huh?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely had the experience of reading the first 2 chapters and going, oh, nothing happened in these.
Well, a lot happened, but it was just one scene, really. Right?
It was one scene. Yeah. So I will take us right in. This is chapter 24. Last time on the Hunger Games, Katniss hears horrible screaming and she can tell it's coming from Prim. Katniss races off to find where Prim is, but finds out it was actually a Jabberjay. She's very upset, but next thing she knows, Finnick is also racing off after someone else's screaming that he hears. She is apparently someone named Annie. Katniss follows him and tries to comfort him, but he points out that they must have gotten the screaming sounds from somewhere and probably tortured them so that the birds would record and play back the screams. Finnick and Katniss, with nothing else to really do about this, double back to the rest of the group, but they're separated by an invisible wall that is kind of like partitioning off the segments of the clock, I think, and like they had run off, so they got stuck on opposite sides. The Jabberjays that have those like screams that they're mimicking come out in full force and do some extended psychological torture on Katniss and Finnick. But once the time of the clock changes, the force field goes down. PETA comforts Katniss by explaining that it was likely just a trick since the family interviews would still have to happen, so they probably didn't actually torture Prim. Beatty confirms by saying like, yeah, it's really easy to make that shit up with computers and stuff. They settle down on the beach, waiting to make camp. Katniss and PETA go off on their own, and PETA tells Katniss that Finnick's Jabberjays must be Annie Cresta, who was a tribute that went mad after seeing her partner get beheaded in the Hunger Games. Since so many people died that day, the group reflects on who is left. Themselves, Chaff, Inabaria, and Brutus. Some bread is delivered by a sponsor. There are 24 rolls, and Finnick seems pretty interested in them. PETA and Katniss take watch overnight, and they have a big talk. They confront each other about having kind of opposite goals in the games, that they are both trying to keep each other alive. PETA's gambit is that he brought a locket that has pictures of Katniss's family in it. They do a big kiss, and Katniss gets really into it. Chapter 25. The next morning, there is another identical delivery of bread. Katniss makes an excuse to talk to Peeta alone because she has decided it is time for them to part from the group since there are so few people left standing. Peeta talks her out of it, saying that Beedi is coming up with a plan to kill Brutus and Inabaria, so they should stick around until that's done at least. Katniss agrees reluctantly. BT explains his plan to the group. They are going to use his wire to create an electrical trap by connecting it to the tree that is always struck by lightning at 12 o'clock. The line is going to run into the water and electrocute anyone in the water as well as on the beach. If it doesn't kill Brutus and Inabaria, it will still kill all the fish in the water, removing a food source. They head toward the lightning tree. They keep hearing weird clicking sounds that they sort of assume to be like bugs in one of the other like segments of the clock or something like that. Since they're going to kill all the fish, they decide that this is their last chance to have a big seafood feast. So they do that. Peeta finds a pearl in an oyster and gives it to Katniss. Another identical gift of rolls appears with their dinner. Now it is time to wait. Katniss thinks she'd like the pearl to be returned to Peeta after she is buried. Chapter 26. That night, they make the climb back into the jungle, heading toward the lightning tree. BT gets to work and takes a while. And then BT reveals that part of his plan will be to have Katniss and Joanna unspool the wire leading down to the water. Peeta tries to go too, so they won't get split up, but he's just too slow to join them. Joanna and Katniss head down. After a while, something goes wrong. The wire goes slack. It's been cut. Someone will be on them at any moment. Suddenly, Katniss is hit on the side of the head. Betrayal. Joanna has hit her with the big wire spool and is now on top of her, stabbing into her arm with her knife and telling her to stay down. Katniss is confused, but Joanna must have been scared off by something because she leaves before she can finish Katniss off. It's Brutus and Inabaria who declare Katniss, quote, as good as dead, and continue on. Katniss is delirious after having been knocked on the head and losing a lot of blood, but she must get to Peeta. She stumbles through the jungle and at one point barely misses running into Finnick, who is running in the opposite direction, yelling for her and Joanna. A cannon booms. Someone has died. Katniss makes it back to the lightning tree. She finds BT, who is knocked out with a cut on his arm. BT is holding a knife that is wrapped in wire. The wire is attached to the tree. Peeta calls out, and Katniss immediately starts yelling back, hoping that anyone that can hear them will be drawn to her and not to Peeta. Two people are coming. It's Inabaria and Finnick, and they are approaching the lightning tree. Katniss raises her bow to shoot Inabaria. Another cannon fires. Katniss does some mental calculus as to how many people Peeta will have to contend with once she's taken out Inabaria and that Finnick will hopefully die by being in proximity to the lightning tree. Peeta will just have to deal with one enemy. Then she remembers what Haymitch told her before the games. You just remember who the enemy is. Katniss realizes what she has to do. She wraps the wire that was attached to Beedi's knife that is then attached to the lightning tree around an arrow and then shoots it at the weak spot in the force field. Explosions begin. Everything is exploding. Sorry, chapter 27. Everything is exploding as Katniss lies on the ground, stunned. A hovercraft grabs her with a big claw. Inside the hovercraft is Plutarch Heavensby, and her worst fears are realized. She and the others are going to be tortured for their rebellion. They won't even just let them die. Katniss wakes up after being healed, and she sees BT healed but unconscious. She realizes she has to go find and kill Peeta to save him from all the torture the Capitol is going to do to them. She finds a syringe to go kill him with and starts creeping around looking for him. Instead, she finds Haymitch. Haymitch explains that she's safe and then explains what happened. And I'm just going to read it directly from the text. Give me one moment. There was a plan to break us out of the arena from the moment the quell was announced. The victor tributes from 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, and 11 had varying degrees of knowledge about it. Plutarch Heavensby has been, for several years, part of an undercover group aiming to overthrow the Capitol. He made sure the wire was among the weapons. BT was in charge of blowing a hole in the force field. The bread we received in the arena was code for the time of the rescue. The district where the bread originated indicated the day. 3. The number of rolls the hour. 24. The hovercraft belongs to District 13. Bonnie and Twill, the women I met in the woods from 8, were right about its existence and its defensive capabilities. We are currently on a very roundabout journey to District 13. Meanwhile, most of the districts in Panem are in full-scale rebellion. Katniss is mad that she and Peeta weren't part of this plan. Joanna is explained to have actually been cutting the tracking device out of her arm and didn't actually attack her for real. I will once again quote from the book. "We had to save you because you're the Mockingjay. While you live, the revolution lives." PETA lived, but he has been taken by the Capitol. In a fury at hearing this news, Katniss attacks Haymitch before she is taken away and sedated. At some point, Finnick comes to talk to her. He tries to comfort her by telling her that PETA will probably be kept alive to be used as bait. Katniss is not very comforted by that. Katniss thinks she'll just die out of spite and won't talk to anyone, won't eat or drink. But finally, her one weakness shows up. It's Gale. Gale tells her that Prim and her mother are still alive, but there is no more District 12. That's the end of the book.
I'm so glad that you just opted to read the actual text of the ending there, because I was about to say, like, in my notes, I was just like, this is just one of our chapter summaries.
I started writing the summary as I was like scanning, like remembering what happened. And I was like, wait, this is already summarized right there for me, so I don't have to do the work.
I don't think I've ever read a book that ends quite like this one does.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should pace ourselves here and talk about like the final action sequence here.
Sure.
The climax first, and then sort of clear the table to talk about what a bizarre way to end a novel this is.
Hmm. I will be honest, I read through it and I had to go back and read it again today because I was sure that I was missing something about the plan. Mm-hmm. And then I went online to read about the plan and I'm like, nope, I just wasn't missing anything. It just sort of is what it is. Did you have an experience like that? Because I was just like a little baffled by it.
It's a lot of setup for a very simple idea.
Hmm.
I had a similar thing of just like, I'm not sure if there's something I'm missing here, because the like BT is suddenly a character in these last couple of chapters. Like he's mm-hmm. talking a lot and he's sort of taking charge in a lot of the discussions the characters are having. After all of that, after like half a chapter of like technical talk and specifically Katniss like saying like, yeah, I didn't really understand all the crazy stuff he was saying. He's just smarter than all of us. His plan is, what if we ran a really long wire down to the water and electrocuted it? Which is like, I mean, yeah, cool, man. That's a great plan. That's a fun idea. But just I was expecting maybe something a little more complicated, I guess, a little more technical.
Yeah, because I mean, it's sort of silly, right? Because I'm like, I don't know anything about electricity. I get the concept, right? You're dropping a hairdryer in the water of the Hunger Games. But the specifics and the logistics are so like both detailed and not that mm-hmm. the details provided make me question the very simple premise. One of the things that is brought up is like, they're like, will that work? And then BT is like, yeah, it's like a fuse. Yeah, because it's a wire that it's not just wire. It's a wire I invented. So it's special. And then I'm like, well, would this not work if it was regular wire? Is that like, and suddenly I just have no clue what's going on anymore.
For as much as I really loved this book's arena, I think that the basin clock thing is really cool. It's got a pink sky. It's all divided into spokes. I thought that was really, really cool. I did have a hard time piecing together a sense of place for the actual jungle and forest that they're running around in these final moments.
Mm-hmm. The scale of the arena makes no sense to me. Not that it's inconsistent at all. It just, I feel like I need to know more about it or to have any sort of sense of like how long it takes them to get place to place. And not that there's no markers about that, because they're like, oh, there's like a specific point where they're like, oh, there's not enough time for us to get. Like, it's going to be close, right? Between them taking the wire down to the water and the time that it's like, yeah, the sense of place and like the scale is not clear to me.
Yeah, it's weird geography for such a critical final action sequence, I think. I have no idea where anyone is. I have no idea how far away anyone that they're worried about could be. I have no idea like how hard it is to climb up and down this terrain. The only real indicator we get is that PETA would be too slow, and that's because he's like still getting used to his leg, right? Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, that stuff is just a little weird. I had a similar moment. I realized that we just skipped over the entire Jabberjay thing.
Oh, because I don't care about it at all.
Because it's really silly. But there, I had a similar thing of like not really understanding how the force field, or rather, it was not a force field. It's a different kind of field.
An invisible wall or something. A different kind of
invisible wall that's not a force field that they were allowed to touch. And I was like, okay, so does that separate? Is that just how the wedges are separated? And this book does a way better job of making the game and the game mechanics themselves more interesting and like really fun to think about how they intersect and stuff. Like a moment I did like in this one is that we saw like the aftermath of one of the locations that we just never got to see. Like someone just got like ripped in half or whatever. And it's like, oh, cool. What happened over there?
Yeah.
And I was like, it's fun to like have these sort of like half formed ideas of like what dangers they could be running into. I thought that was great, but like, the place that this stuff is all taking place in and like how far away from each spoke, each other spoke is just very confusing, I think. I'm not 100% clear on like how the force field works even, because if it's a big dome and a clock, I think of a big circle. But also the force field like zigzags apparently, right? Because Katniss has to look for the squares and sort of like guess where it is and throw the nuts to burn. Just a lot of like logistics where I'm like, wait, are we not just in a big round thing?
Yeah, definitely.
We should talk about the Jabberjay stuff though, because it is, I mean, it's really
stupid.
It's really dumb. It's really, really dumb. I at least appreciate how heightened this was. The thing that really turned me off of it wasn't like the actual thing. I think the bird that makes you freak out and think that someone you know is being tortured, that's a fun evil mechanic idea. A+ to the game maker who came up with that. The part that I thought was ridiculous was the aftermath of it, where everyone was sitting around arguing about whether it was real or not. I think PETA is meant to be unconvincing here. Just him very, very condescendingly explaining like, oh, well, and like, what did they do with
what happens next, Katniss?
Yeah, what happens after we win, Katniss? Very good. They do the, like, fuck off. I hate his ass. But I was just like, that's a really, really flimsy argument. And maybe it's supposed to be, but there's a lot of real estate devoted to explaining that, and then also having BT go like, oh yeah, you could like do that with like a computer or whatever.
Yeah, I do like that Joanna is the one that is not scared of the birds because she doesn't love anyone.
That made me laugh out loud. That was on a page break in my coffee.
She rocks.
She's hard as fuck. I had a bunch of notes on the Jabberjay, but I can't. Do we care about the Jabberjay? Do we want to talk about the Jabberjays anymore?
That's where I'd hang out. If I was in the Hunger Games, I'd just hang out in the Jabberjay quadrant.
The Jabberjay, because like, what are they going to do? They're birds. They can't get my ass. They're not monkeys that attack you or a lightning bolt that hits you or an evil fog. They're just birds that scream. I can deal with that. I'll get some earplugs.
Yeah.
No problem. It's not that I don't want to talk about it, but I'm just like, there's just such a looming shadow of what we could be talking about. So what the fuck happened in the ending? What the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Even the fight is bad, but like at least it was like a climax.
Uh-huh.
Brutus and Inabaria, non-characters, didn't care that they were the ones who were coming after them to fight. I was intrigued about what was going on. At least I was like, ooh, you know, Katniss is shooting the wire at the force field. What's going to happen? And then to turn the page and see that what happens next is that she wakes up and gets the Cliff's Notes version of what happened to her made me insane. I can't believe that this is how this book ends.
It's like Suzanne Collins was like taking a test and she was running out of time.
Was there a word count limit on this book. I've seen a lot of weird and bad endings. I've read a lot of books. I've seen a lot of movies. I don't think I have ever read anything that ends in quite this specific way. I've read books where a character explains what happened or like explains the ending to someone.
Mm-hmm.
But those at least have the dignity to write the dialogue out and like have the character explain it.
Yeah, I mean, we've got that with like every Harry Potter book.
Someone explains to Harry, hey, here's what happened when you got knocked out after you did your stealth mission.
Yeah.
But it's at least someone talking. I had no idea when I was saying back in the chapter where Bonnie and Twill explain what happened in their district. And I was like, oh, I'm a little disappointed that that was so like detached from the characters, right? Like it was just sort of a post facto explanation of what Katniss heard. I had no idea that that is how the whole book would finish.
Yeah.
I'm also, I feel like a little burned and annoyed by it because the things he's describing sound kind of cool.
Yes.
I'm fascinated by this.
It's really quite strange. I don't have any idea why it is so detached. It almost feels cinematic with no accompanying visuals, right? Like, I feel like this is written like a character is narrating flashback footage.
I watched the 1984 version of Dune recently.
Mm-hmm.
And because that movie has to like scrunch down this like 800 page book into 2 hours, there's this part where they just cut out like the entire back 2/3 of the novel that isn't the ending. And it was just like a voiceover saying like, yeah, Chani and Paul, they had a kid. They were fighting a bunch of the Harkonnen guys all over the desert, and they claimed a bunch of mining facilities. And they just run through like a span of like 5 years in the book in like a 30-second voiceover.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not good, but like I get why they had to do it. But like this isn't something that had to do that. Hunger Games could be as long as it needs to be. And if this was the plot, if this was the payoff, like this makes the amount of time that it took for us to get to the Hunger Game itself bizarre. What were we spending all that fucking time on if it wasn't for a payoff?
Yeah, I guess that's sort of my, like, other than feeling a little bit stunned by the way the book ended, it did make me reflect back on the structure of the entire book and the kind of like, okay, what are we doing here aspect of it? Like what was going on with Catching Fire?
Yeah, I would love to know if there's something like if it really was just like timing pressure, because this book came out a year after the first one, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly on a fast track, although I just can't imagine that, you know, I books aren't all written linearly, right? Like you don't start at chapter one and end at chapter whatever. It's but you write stuff out of order. You swap stuff around. The thing that actually makes me like most upset is that a lot of these things are cool. Like the bread thing is cool. The rebellion thing is cool. Haymitch having a secret plan the entire time, even when he was saying like, no, you could never fucking do a rebellion. Listen to yourself. Like, that's so cool. I love all of that. But it's just it's such a great example of like why the actual writing matters. If you just tell someone the events of a story, that really doesn't. That's like only like a fraction of what makes a story interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And just reading a list of events and facts is just like this. I've occasionally like read spoilers from like people who've gone to see a movie or got an early copy of a video game or whatever that I was like mildly interested in, but didn't want to get for myself and just wanted to like know what happened. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels like this feels like it's doing that for itself. Like I'm reading the post that someone made a week before Catching Fire came out on LiveJournal. Very weird. Very, very weird.
I mean, you're right. Like I think it's all really cool. And I kind of, I guess there is like a small bit of satisfaction from just like feeling like there is the clues were there, I suppose. But yeah, having it just sort of relayed to you is real. I don't know why it's not dialogue.
Yeah, I think that I could swallow it being a, you know, a like post facto, like here's all the stuff that happened while you were knocked out ending, if we got to like hear Haymitch say it, because Haymitch is a fun character, right? Like, I want to hear him.
Yeah.
I want to hear him talk. But this just, we don't get any of the fun, characterful Haymitch stuff, and we don't get any flavor at all. Like, Katniss does eventually react when she hears that PETA is missing, but it's just the wind really gets sucked out of the sails here. There were a million ways I could have seen this book ending, and I not in a million years would I have guessed that this was how what we were reading was going to end up as.
I would have liked, if it had to be like a dialogue explanation, which I think would have been fine, I would have enjoyed, I mean, because Haymitch is fun and I think he should have led the conversation, but it should have been like a roundtable conversation of everyone who's there, mm-hmm. right? Like Finnick and Heavensby and Haymitch, and Katniss should have been coming into conflict with them mm-hmm. as the conversation was happening.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's things in here that are like, and maybe this is what salvages it going into book three, right? Is like, there are interesting things to hold on to here. It's like having PETA, as much as I hate him, as much as I don't care, like just purely structurally, yeah, sure, have him captured. That makes sense. She's going to try and find a way to juggle rescuing him versus being a, you know, leading a rebellion next book. That simple setup. I like that. I like her not being in the know, you know, like a reason. In fact, I think one of us even predicted that would be how that particular thing would shake out. Right. Hmm. Didn't one of us predict that, like, oh, like she's being sort of sheltered because, like, she's, like, you know, she's going to end up feeling like she was equally as used by the rebels as she was the cap. Like, I was just like, that feels like,
yeah.
like an easy one to call. That's a fun conflict to have. Finnick having this, well, Finnick's conflict is weird because it's just we're just sort of given it a chapter before the book ends. All this stuff with Annie.
Oh yeah, I don't care about that at all. There's the fucking Jabberjays again.
Yeah. See, that's the thing, is that there's a lot more that did, I guess, technically happen in these chapters where I'm just like, I just can't, because of the way the book ends and because of the way that it's deployed literally in the 11th hour in this story, it's really hard to put too much stock in any of it, because it's like, well, yeah, I mean, like, I guess Annie is a factor, but it, like, not to me so far, right? Because I learned her name 3 pages ago.
Yeah, I care more about Finnick's relationship with Katniss.
Yeah.
What if the Jabberjay had been Katniss's ooh, screaming voice?
Ooh, that would have been interesting.
And then she's like, what the hell, Finnick?
And then she'd know that, and then they'd know, that's how they'd know that it was like fake.
Yeah.
Or something, right? I was like, oh, it's probably that. Then they could at least have like speculate, like, oh, well, if they've got my voice, then maybe it really is synthesized, you know, and there can still be some unease around it. But BT just being like, I know computers. That shit's easy to fake. Is very funny. I will say, it would be funny if he was just lying there. That I think that might salvage it, if it turns out he's just lying and it's like, oh yeah, no, they totally have Prim and her mom in like a room, right? Somewhere, right? Like, but unless Gail's lying, it sounds like maybe it was fake. I don't know. I tricked myself into talking about the Jabberjays more. I don't care about the Jabberjays. I care about Effie not being at this round table at the end.
I need Effie to be a rebel so bad.
I want Effie to be secretly good, or at least like press ganged into being good, you know, like that would be.
I want her to be the most reluctant good guy.
Yes, exactly. Like she's just like, well, I mean, I suppose so. I mean, I like you and Haymitch. Like, that would be really fun, I think.
I want her archetype to be like, says something evil, and then everyone has to be like, Effie, remember you're with the good guys now. And she's like, oh yeah, haha, oops.
Yeah.
Where's Cinna?
Where is Cinna? That is a very good question. Cinna is evil. We were right this whole time. Cinna's evil. He's not on the ship. It turns out he was the most bad guy. He's actually the power behind President Snow.
Wouldn't that be cool? 100% he's a good guy. I'm sure start of Mockingjay, they're going to land at the secret rebel base and Cinna's going to be like the one greeting them.
Yeah.
Being like, welcome to the facility.
Yeah. Ooh, that makes me so mad. The fucking, out of all of the reveals that are just dropped in that like bullet point list there, the ending on District 13 is real, over like the place Bonnie and Twill said existed, they were right and we're going there. That's crazy. That is such a high stakes thing. That was like the entire conflict for the first third of the book, was wondering whether District 13 was real. Like, remember we had that whole long discussion about like, oh, the way they chose to reveal that was being covered up was kind of interesting, because it's like, you know, it's all the TV propaganda. It's like edited. It's like, ooh, Katniss figured out that the video is looping, and that's how she becomes suspicious that maybe Bonnie and Twill were like, kind of a dumb sequence, but it's, you know, it's like laying tracks for like a big like, yeah, you were right, it's real moment. And to just get that as like, oh, by the way, that's real. That whole thing, that's real. No ceremony whatsoever. That's wild. That's crazy. That's like, I don't know. Like, speaking of stories where someone gets told what happened afterwards after the fact. You know, I'm just gonna pull one that like we saw together. Remember when we went to see Return of the King?
Yeah.
What if Frodo had like fallen off of that big rock wall that they had to climb and got knocked out and got taken home by an eagle way earlier, and the movie ended with him waking up and Gandalf being like, so Sam actually carried it the rest of the way and threw it, he threw it into the fire. Well, actually, oh, by the way, Gollum actually was bad. Gollum couldn't resist the ring, and he fell into the, it was crazy. You should have been there. You should have seen it. It is wild. It's a shame that you got knocked out right before all the interesting. Oh, Aragorn led a whole army. You know, he is of course the rightful king of Gondor, and he, you know, everyone pledged their service to him even after wearing themselves out at the Battle of Pelennor Fields. Yes, they did actually all go. They marched to the Black Gate. He did confirm. Actually, if you watch the extended one, he did cut the head off of the mouth of Sauron guy. That was really fucking cool. Yeah. No. Any other questions, Frodo? Just like, that's what this felt like to me.
Yeah.
Like, oh, by the way, District 13's real. Okay. Cool. Thanks. What if? Like that one pisses me off too, because that's one. That one's easy. That one's fucking so easy to do as like a cool reveal. If we're doing action movie schlock, adventure schlock, which is what The Hunger Games is. You tell her all, you can still do the scene where you run down all the stuff for Katniss. Like, here's everything. And she can be like, where are we going? And then you like look out the window and you see, oh, it's the thing from the TV. It's real. It's like, I see it. Oh, that's where we're going. Like any flavor, any pizzazz at all would have been an improvement over this. Just crazy. Oh my God. Oh my God. What if Indiana Jones had gotten knocked out during the car chase? And then Sala like woke him up and was like, well, they opened the Ark, Indy. It was fucking crazy. A guy's face melted.
If you're me, then like maybe you can't keep numbers in your head very well. And so maybe you read this and forgot that. And when they said District 13, you were like, oh, that's where Katniss is from. Oh, wait, District 12 is gone. Oh, District 13 is the district. And then so like you got a little confused at the end because you didn't realize it was this huge reveal. Because it's mentioned mostly in passing.
That was really funny. I got confused in that moment because I was like, it took me a minute to like a little second to understand that he meant like it got bombed, right? Like it's not there anymore. Because he doesn't say like, you know, I'm so sorry, Katniss. You know, District 12 is no more, or District 12 is gone. He says District 12 doesn't exist, which is a really weird way to phrase that. In a book where the conflict is at the one that's one number higher than that, whether that exists or not, like as a whole, I was just like, oh, okay, I get what you're saying. You're speaking figuratively. It's gone.
It wasn't like a magician's trick.
Your whole life, Katniss, actually, we grew up in a hologram. We didn't, that none of that was real. There is no District 12. It was nice to see Gale, at least.
Yeah, I guess. I'm all in on Finnick now, so whatever.
Yeah, Finnick is fucking awesome.
Yeah, Finnick and Joanna are just like the cool Katniss and Peeta.
Yes. Yeah, they're cooler, they're weirder. I'm happy that Joanna, you know, was good at the end, although it would have been, I would have kind of been rooting for her if she was bad, too. I liked it, too, when she was yelling at the cameras, like, oh, wouldn't want a rebellion. Hope nothing bad happens. Hope nobody's rebelling out there. That was pretty cool. She's cool.
She rocks.
She rocks. Yeah, yeah.
Did you have it in your head that BT was like 40?
I kind of pictured him as like a Harold Ramis type, like a ghost, like a nerdy Ghostbusters okay. guy. I think was kind of my take on him.
Sure.
What did you picture?
I didn't picture anything. Mm-hmm. Is the thing. I didn't have any anchor, and so I ended up like looking up like how old was BT?
How old is BT?
It's like, oh, he's like 40 something, in his 40s.
Yeah.
Which I'm not objecting to. I had very little like mental picture.
Yeah, I think when they are introduced in the training facility, it describes them as like both him and Wyrus having like black hair and glasses and looking kind of nerdy. And I think I just sort of like pictured like either, like I said, Harold Ramis for him, or the other thing that I was thinking of when Wyrus was around more often was I this is like not an accurate picture at all, but I was just like, oh, two like 30 to 40 something nerds with big glasses. Oh, it's the band She and Him. That's who that's who they're hanging around with here. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I just sort of pictured like IT guy, I guess.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a hard time with my mental picture through most of it with the tributes, simply because they are like of mixed age. And other than like Megs, who is old, and that's her trait, it's being old. Yeah. They are so like socially on equal footing.
Yes.
And that felt sort of weird to me, and it compressed their ages together for me. So I had this moment where I was like, oh, I have no reason to believe that BT is like their age. And it was that moment where he kind of took over and started being that like guidance person. I was like, oh, yeah, I guess he's probably not 17, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not like I was actively feeling like thinking that he was 17. Mm-hmm. But it is interesting that they are so socially on equal footing other than in that moment, I think.
You'd think that like the differences between the districts, the differences in their ages, all that kind of thing should be like causing fun buddy action comedy friction, and it rarely does.
It's almost like if there was going to be a Hunger Games in this book, it should have just had more time.
Yes.
Like, I know that I complained a lot, but I'm like, if you're gonna do a Hunger Games, can we at least do one?
Yeah, I would love to know. It's a shame that, I mean, it's not a shame. She can do what she wants, but just in relation to this, it is a shame that Susan Collins is so reclusive when it comes to interviews about these books. Because I would really like to know why this book is structured the way it is, why the ending is given in such a strange truncated format, and what we were doing before the Hunger Games. Like, it would be one thing if we had all of that set up for a short Hunger Game and then a long payoff, right? Like, if the rebellion was like, or if the this escape and stuff was like at least several more chapters. But the way that the setup stuff works here, I mean, I guess the best comparison I can make is, like, this book felt like reading one of those movies that has part one in the title that have been coming out recently, right? Yeah. Where it's like a bunch of like really fun, interesting setup for the first hour and a half, and then the last half hour has to sort of make up a satisfying ending for a story that we know is getting a part two in like a year or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same thing here, where I'm just like, there's this weird, just like Matrix Reloaded ask truncated ending here of just like, oh, okay, I guess this is happening now. And I'm curious why that was the idea that she went with when, like, and maybe I'm completely wrong here. Maybe Scholastic, or I think it was Scholastic that published this, but who, maybe the publisher was HarperCollins, was like incredibly overbearing. Maybe there was trouble writing this. Maybe Catching Fire and Mockingjay were written as one book and she kind of had to like cut the baby in half. Like, there are so many things I can imagine hearing about this, right, that I have no idea, I have no context for, because there's not really much out there about the process of writing these. Granted, we did ourselves no favors by reading it over like 3 months, but longer than that even, but I think I actually would have found this even weirder if I had read it in like a weekend, right? Like,
yeah,
it really comes to an abrupt stop.
It does. It's very strange. And it's just like between the ending and the Hunger Game itself, that's a whole book.
Yeah. I really don't know. I don't know why it had to be structured this way, and I don't know why we needed, if all of this stuff was so important that it had to be at least included in list format, then I don't know why we needed Haymitch and Katniss and Peeta fucking around in District 12 for so long. I don't know why we needed all the stuff in the Capitol. I don't know why we needed like the tour, like all that stuff. Like, if what really matters is this Hunger Game and the escape from the Hunger Game, then make it about that, because all of the setup for that ending is in the Hunger Game, right? Like, other than Plutarch Heavensby showing her the watch, which he even admits is like, well, I didn't know you were going to be the tribute at that point, right? Like, all of that stuff, all of the stuff that matters, it, you know, all, like the clues with the wire, the clues with the clock, the clues with the force field. I guess that happens in the training center, but like, the clues about the about everyone watching her and acting kind of weird about protecting her. The clues about the bread and like the code, all that stuff happens within the Hunger Games. So like, you can seed all that stuff. Clearly you can seed a bunch of clues in a Hunger Game. So it could have been a little more fleshed out. I don't know. I'm going to be like walking around thinking about this for ages. Like, why did it have to get in? Why did it have to end like this?
There's some really great stuff in here. I still really enjoyed the moment where Katniss, like earlier on, I think it was maybe last week, where the whole thing with the other tributes protecting PETA. And I didn't enjoy Katniss like thinking about why that was and that it was because PETA is such a great public speaker or whatever. But I loved the like mystery of that. I think there are some good mysteries in this book that sort of wasted potential with how they were revealed to us.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's why, I think that's maybe why I find this, the actual ending itself so galling, is because all of the things that were being set up, I was pretty invested in. I thought that Plutarch, I was really wondering, like, ooh, what was, you know, is Plutarch a good guy or a bad guy? Why did he show her the watch? You know, what did he know? Or like, was he trying to tell her something? Like, that's an easy one. The District 13 mystery, like, while I think the TV thing was like silly, it was like fun silly, right? I'm like, yeah, I'd like to know if there's like a secret place or not, right? Like, that's fun. Who can be trusted? Again, easy one. And like, all of these things are just really good hooks. It's why the actual words of the thing matter, right? Like, it's like, it felt like reading a Sherlock Holmes mystery and getting told the answer halfway through. It's like, no, I want to see the part where Sherlock gathers everyone in the parlor and explains the thought process to them, right? Like, I do actually want to see that. And I do actually want to see these equally archetypical scenes pay off. Like, yeah, District 13 probably exists. If you're writing a story this schlocky and there's a mysterious place that no one believes exists, it probably does. I probably knew that, right? From the moment it was mentioned.
Knew that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's just kind of how stories are written, but that doesn't matter. What I want to know is, how do we get there? How do you make it fun? I want to see a magic trick, right? Like, I want to see, like, there's just no fun in just telling me, like, oh yeah, this place exists. Like, okay, well, I mean, I probably could have guessed that, but, you know, give me some pizzazz. Give me a cool scene where Katniss figures that out, right?
Yeah. When did Haymitch know?
Right.
Has he always known?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe there's going to be like a bunch more exposition in the beginning of Mockingjay, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a very weird way to end a book that had, I think, like you say, I agree with you, like, a lot of cool moments and like a lot of fun setup. And it's just such a weird way to end all that setup. It doesn't really count as a payoff if you just say, completely detached from any characterization, from any plotting, like removed from the idea of like scenes revealing stuff. Like, just having a bullet point list is just, I was really, really taken aback by that. And I'm like Googling around. I'm just like trying to see, like, is there any, what I'm very fascinated by is that, like, the critical reception was great for this book, which that doesn't surprise me, but I was curious if there was any, like, any reviews that were just like, yo, that ending is crazy, and I can't really find anything. And I did find this just briefly checking the critical reception tab on Wikipedia, even. There's this sentence that's really leaping out to me that's really funny. Booklist commented on how the quote, unadorned prose provides an open window to perfect pacing.
Oh.
Which I'm just like, I mean, I don't know about that.
Pacing poor.
The very last sentence of Catching Fire will lead readers gasping.
Really?
Yeah.
The No More District 12?
Yeah. Maybe they also had the made the mistake we did it for. Wait, like, doesn't exist? Like, doesn't exist? Oh, you mean it's gone. You mean it's gone. It was destroyed. Okay.
I wasn't that invested in District 12. Maybe that's a me problem.
No more coal school, though.
Oh no.
Yeah, what happened to the coal school? Yeah, I'm I'm looking for any kind of, like, I couldn't find any earlier, and I'm just double checking now. Can't find any real, like, interviews about this book either. It's just, it is what it is, and we just sort of have to deal with it, I guess, that this is how this ends. I'm just so surprised. I guess I know why I've never really heard anyone talk about the ending of Catching Fire. You know, this isn't one that, like, entered the cultural zeitgeist of, like, you know, the kind of thing that just gets spoiled for you through osmosis, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of hard to, because any sentence that could spoil it for you would basically be the book verbatim, because that's, like, how the book ends, is someone explaining what happened to you.
Right.
Very, very weird. Very, very strange. Yeah. I don't know. Any other thought? What do you think of the book as a whole? Like, what do you make of this as a sequel to The Hunger Games? Like, do you like this one better? Do you think it's worth, like, what are you feeling on this thing?
There was stuff that I liked way better than the first one. Its highs are higher, but its lows are way lower.
Yeah. Yeah, that I think I agree with. I think that I mean, the one thing that I will just, like, unabashedly praise is I love the arena setup in this one.
Yeah.
I think that this is so much better as an adventure than the last one, even if it is, like, only in the back third of the book, but just, like, having this imagery of, like, the basin and the clock and the pink sky and all the strange animals and the like, you know, the mysterious, ooh, someone got torn in half on the other side. What's happening over there? There's so much better of a sense of danger and mystery, and it just, like, looking and feeling cool here than in the first one, where it just was, like, Pacific Northwest outside, right? Just sort of, like, nothing.
Do you think that all the Hunger Games are really, like, wacky and whimsical and with, like, really obvious game mechanics, and, like, Seneca Crane got it. It was, like, his first Hunger Games, and he's like, I'm going to make a gritty, realistic Hunger Games. And that was, like, his one, because he was, like, executed afterward. But that was the gritty realism Hunger Games.
That's why it's called The Hunger Games. They all had numbers up until that point, but his was the gritty reboot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that, because the things we've heard about the other Hunger Games is that there's, like, really intriguing sounding shorthand for all of them, because there was, like, there's the cannibalism one, right, where there, like, wasn't enough food and, like, everyone went crazy and started trying to eat each other. There was the one where there was, like, a serial killer, which I guess isn't part of the game design, but that, like, does sound cool, right? Like, there was a guy just going, oh, wait, is that the same one I remember? Because there's the one that Kat has mentioned in book one, where just, like, someone was going around beheading people.
Yeah. There's the one where everyone died to poisonous snakes.
Mm-hmm. In talking to BT, I think, she's like, she mentions, like, oh, was that the earthquake year? Which was kind of fun. Like, that's like the way people talk about, like, sports seasons or like esports seasons, right? Like, oh, was that the one where so-and-so was super OP? I choose to believe that Seneca just sucked ass at making a Hunger Game. I higher highs, lower lows, I think, for sure. I think that the Hunger Game was way better, just a lot more fun, really exciting. I guess, like, as a, and this isn't something that really matters, because it's not like I wanted this out of the Hunger Games. You know, it's not something I'm craving. But I do think it's interesting, given its reputation, that I really do feel that this book just really put a knife in the idea that this is, like, a serious political story.
Mm-hmm.
The main character being important because she is a symbol. That's a classic, you know, that's a classic YA thing. It's not that I dislike it. It's just that you're a different kind of story when you're dealing with that kind of thing.
Right.
Totally reasonable to do in a YA thing. I'm not knocking the idea, but I do think that, like, any discussion of the Hunger Games is like, oh, this is, like, a really radical work of fiction. It's like, no, it's not. It's an adventure story through and through. It's action schlock, and that is totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I am fascinated by by the reputation that this book had as I went in, right? And maybe the third one will turn things around in that department.
My understanding is the third one is the politics one.
Okay.
So I don't know, because I can't say for certain there's no Hunger Games in that one, but there might not be.
Okay.
I think we're going to war in Mockingjay.
Okay.
But that's all and that's just like weird osmosis, not really based on anything. So I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Like, I guess I'm at least, you know, I'm coming away from this and going like, okay, I'm like, I'm excited to see where things go, but I'm never going to forget this ending, man. This is one of the weirdest novel endings I have ever read. You poked around on the subreddit after this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you find people confused about the ending or talking about the ending?
Yeah, because I looked it up because I was worried that I was confused. And like half of the posts when you just like search Catching Fire into the Hunger Games subreddit is people mm-hmm. being like, wait a second, what? And saying like confused about ending of Catching Fire, confused about what happened in Catching Fire, like all of those. and there are so many of those posts.
Okay.
People were confused.
I wish that I might maybe for like a bonus episode or for a future episode, I might try and do some like time capsule research and find some forum posts and live journal posts and stuff from the time. Mm-hmm. Because I gotta say, I had never heard like, oh, the ending of Catching Fire is really rushed.
You also didn't hear a monkey attack, so
could have just been too far removed, right? Or maybe it's just luck. But yeah, I read this and I'm just like, how is that not the first thing people say about this series? Like book two just stops. Like it just like.
Yeah. I sort of wonder if that kind of lack of buzz is because The Hunger Games is really popular and well-liked, but it's not like beloved.
It's incredibly influential though, right? Like.
Yeah, for sure. I assume the movie is not this abrupt, right?
I'm really excited to watch the movie now. I would love to know how they handle this. Yeah, I'm doing exactly what you did. Question about the escape. Question about BT's plan. Catching Fire ending question. I don't get the ending of Catching Fire. I'm confused about the plan at the end of Catching Fire. There's a lot here, yeah. Catching Fire ending. Anyone else confused with the ending of Catching Fire? Okay, yeah, there's okay, yeah.
I was really confused, and then I realized there was nothing to be confused about.
The last part of the book is really messy. It was BT who was supposed to take down the force field, but he misjudged proximity and ended up getting hurt.
Nobody seems to have any sort of consensus on what happened to BT, because I have seen two things. One, people talking very authoritatively that he was wrong about the force field and got knocked out. And two, that Inabaria and Brutus like found and attacked him. Like, both of those things people say very authoritatively.
Yeah. I'd love to know how the movie structures this. Do you wish that, like, maybe Inabari and Brutus had been stalking them throughout the whole Hunger Game?
Yes. They don't feel threatening at all. It feels like they just, like, didn't come across each other. And then I'm still stuck thinking... If you drop a plugged-in hairdryer into the ocean, all the fish don't die.
Maybe it's really powerful lightning. It's very confusing, too, because he's like...
said it's special wire.
It's special wire, and also the lightning isn't real, or it's like fake lightning, which I'd love to know how you make fake lightning. I don't know what that means.
Synthetic fire?
Fuck, oh my god. Synthetic fire, yeah, we got synthetic lightning this time. Well... I feel like, you know, it's the end of the book, so we can go long, but at the same time, I'm like, is there anything else to discuss about the book here?
I guess there's one big element we haven't really talked about, which is the Peeta-Katniss romance scene.
Right.
And how that all, I mean, it doesn't conclude because Peeta is, like, captured or whatever, but it feels like a little bit of, like, Katniss has her moment of, like, oh, this is real, and Peeta gets his moment of showing the weird locket that he has with Katniss's pictures in it.
I think the thing that really makes that thing, that whole thing feel kind of hollow and makes me continue hating PETA is that he literally says at one point, so the locket thing didn't work. He sucks.
It's so funny. I hate PETA as much as you, but I did laugh when PETA's argument is like, your family needs you. My family doesn't need me. And Katniss in her head is like, yeah, that's true.
Yes, that's really, really a great Katniss moment of her just hearing that and going like, huh, actually, yeah.
What's going to happen? Because Katniss is the symbol of the rebellion and like the figurehead and all that stuff. What's going to happen when she's not pregnant?
Did you ever watch the show Burn Notice?
No.
Okay. Pilot episode of Burn Notice, there's a character with an Irish accent.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 2 of Burn Notice, she no longer has the accent. And she goes like, and a character even goes like, oh, your accent's gone. And she goes like, yeah, well, I'm undercover, so it would be weird if I, you know, had my same accent, wouldn't it? And they just sort of like lampshade. Like, that's the kind of level I expect the pregnancy to matter.
False positive.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no. I actually just had a tummy ache.
It's so weird. Why is that in there at all?
It turns out that PETA's sperm sucks just as much as he does. So. Maybe it could be spun into something fun if it's like. This new rebellion is sort of over. Like, the one thing that I think could make this oh, you're the figurehead thing work, you know, you're the spark, as if that it ends up being portrayed as this like crazy deluded thing that these people think they need to do rather than something that is just like true, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If it's that there's this rebellion, but it's like been, you know, there's just someone in the ranks who's obsessed with having like a mascot who thinks Katniss is really interesting and is gonna do everything in their power to force her into this like dream role or whatever. I could see that being interesting if they're like, you know, oh no, like we need you to be we got you a fake baby. Here's this baby. If anything's getting cut between, you know, when just like you're watching a TV show and like subplots get cut between seasons, that one feels like that's ready to be dropped because it's just, it didn't factor in. It barely mattered in this story.
Right. It didn't matter.
Yeah. There was one moment in this story where Katniss remembered to like double over and go like, ooh, my tummy.
Finnick brings it up a couple times, which I still think is like going to be the reveal that he knows that it was fake.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just so crazy and feels so pointless.
I think we were right about guessing that was about like that weird thing he did where he like patted her stomach and was like, because you're eating for two or whatever he did. Right. Like that felt so outlandishly like joking. Right. Or I'm just like, he was fucking with her. Right. Like he was having some fun.
Yeah. What a strange book.
Very, very strange book. Speaking of strange books, before we go, would you like to read one or two chapters of Holmes, Marple, and Poe?
I would love to. I don't remember what happened last time. We are trying to talk to a cop.
Yeah, they're trying to talk to the, is it the chief of police? They're trying to talk to an important guy, but he wasn't at his office, so they're going to go to his house.
Yeah.
Chapter 5. Heading north on the West Side Highway, the GTO's 380 horsepower engine growled as Poe speed shifted through traffic.
No.
We're back to the cars. Once they passed Riverside Park, he opened it up further. Think he'll beat us home? Asked Holmes. Only if he took the chopper, said Poe. The GPS had estimated a 34-minute drive to Riverdale. It took 20. Poe slowed.
Logistics!
See, here we go. Susan Collins, you can learn a thing or two, maybe. Just kidding. Poe slowed the car to a crawl as they entered the narrow, tree-lined roads of the exclusive Fieldstim Enclave. The stately homes were set on natural hills and tucked away in cozy hollows. It was like a charming forest village where low-end properties went for about $2 million. More logistics. Poe drove slowly up Goodridge Avenue. I think your car might stand out a bit in this neighborhood, said Marple. Poe looked around. Marple was right. The curved driveways were dotted with Mercedes, BMWs, and Teslas. Oh yeah, your really fancy classic car will really stick out. Old rich guys hate classic cars. He parked the flashy red Pontiac in a shady spot across the entrance to Boulin's secluded estate, then climbed out of the car. Holmes and Marple followed. They took positions in a grove of fir trees near the stone pillars at the end of the driveway. Just 2 minutes later, a black Suburban rolled up onto the street and pulled to a gentle stop. The rear door opened. Police Commissioner Boulin stepped out. He was tall and imposing, with wavy silver hair. Poe watched from behind a thick trunk as Boulin waved to his driver, who executed a skillful K-turn and drove off. The commissioner walked to his mailbox and pulled out a small stack of envelopes and magazines, then started up the driveway, flipping through the mail as he went. Poe glanced at his partners and gave the signal. All at once, they stepped out from behind cover. They just were just standing behind a tree. Hello. Boulin looked up, startled. Anything interesting in the mail? Asked Holmes. Or just the usual bribes? Boulin's expression darkened as the three PIs approached. Damn! Sherlock coming out swinging here. What are you doing here? I told my girl to get rid of you. Don't blame Samantha, said Holmes. She did her best. He pulled out a business card. Holmes, Marple, and Poe Investigations, he said. When we said we needed to talk to you, we meant it. Boulin ignored the card. Why are you skulking around in my woods, he said, thrusting his square chin forward. Poe stepped up. Commissioner, he said, the information we have concerns Sloane Stone. Boulin waved dismissively. Right, you and everyone else in town. He started back up the driveway. If you've got a lead, call the hotline, or make an appointment through channels like professionals instead of a pack of goddamn stalkers. Poe glanced at Holmes. This was the moment. We know she was murdered, Holmes called out, and we know where she's buried. Boulin stopped and turned around slowly. He took a few steps back down the driveway and looked from Holmes to Marple to Poe. And how the hell do you know that? When you have eliminated the impossible, said Holmes. Oh, brother. Okay. Said Holmes. Whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. That's the second time he has said a Holmes line in 4 chapters of this book. So about 10 pages total.
Wow. Okay.
Boulin's eyes narrowed. That sounds like gobbledygook, he said. But sure, I'll call your bluff. He folded his thick arms across his chest. Where is she? Would you believe it? That's the end of a chapter.
Holmes has said a bunch of Sherlock stuff, but when is Poe going to get to, like, say some freaky shit?
Yeah, Poe hasn't said anything. Poe's mostly just talked about his car so far.
Yeah.
Which I don't think Poe really... I don't know if I'd take Edgar Allan Poe for a cars guy. I gotta be honest. God, that one was really short. But that's also kind of the allure of the Patterson novel. What do you say? You want to take another spin, or do you want to leave it there?
I'm happy either way.
Shall we flip a coin? Maybe we should make a game out of this and flip a coin each time.
Yeah,
because they're really short. Like, okay, do you have a coin on you? Do you have a quarter?
No.
Fuck. I don't know if I have a quarter either. I don't have coins anymore. Hold on. Let me go. There's got to be a website for that. Surely, flip a coin. It's a Google app. Okay. Heads or tails? And also, is heads we read it, tails we don't? What do you think?
Yep, that sounds good to me.
Okay, heads we read it, tails we don't. Heads, another chapter.
Wonderful.
3 hours later, Holmes stood with Marple and Poe at the entrance to an abandoned farm about 100 miles north of New York City. He looked around at the small caravan of police vehicles that had escorted them. Boolin hadn't been ready to call out a full search team on the say-so of three unfamiliar PIs, but he'd agreed to send a couple of rookies and one homicide detective for a preliminary scout. Holmes could feel his heart racing. The partners had agreed that he would take the lead on this case, but at the moment, he was way out of his comfort zone. As soon as they had arrived, the odors of fertilizer and manure had overwhelmed him. They were staggering, almost intolerable, clouding his olfactory senses just when he really needed them. He leaned back against a fence post and pressed his hand against his temples, breathing through his mouth. His superior sense of smell made him part bloodhound, part pointer, and part bulldog, but sometimes it just made him sick. I forgot
about that trait of his.
Yeah, he smells really good.
I like that he says that this is when he needs it the most, and I'm like, is he going to try to smell the dead body in the field?
He felt Poe's hand on his shoulder. Brendan, are you okay? Holmes nodded. I just need a few minutes to adjust to the redolence. What happened? Asked Marple. Or what's happening? Asked Marple. He's recalibrating his nostrils, said Poe. Hell yeah. Not a fan of country air? Asked Detective Lieutenant Helena Gray. Holmes could tell that she thought this was a waste of time, and he sensed that she was going out of her way to needle him. Gray was a newcomer to the squad. Holmes estimated her age at 38, give or take a year. From quick observation, he determined that she was a natural blonde. Oh, he used that with his big brain. He figured that one out. Okay. With just a little salon assist, normally he would have been able to detect the level of ethanolamine in her hair dye, but not today. Too much olfactory competition. I much prefer the urban miasma, said Holmes. Gray cocked her head. Tell me something, Mr. Holmes. How can you be so sure of the location of Sloane's body unless you had something to do with hiding it? Holmes ignored this jab and stalled for time, waiting for his overactive senses to settle. He glanced around the property, from the barnyard to the fence line in the distance. If you want to dispose of a body on a farm, he said, you have several options. You can feed it to the pigs, but they leave hair and teeth behind, so it's an incomplete solution. You can bury the body in the middle of a field, but eventually a plow or some woodland creature will dig it up. You can drop a body in a grain silo, but you'd have to lug the dead weight up the stairs and hope that you don't tumble in yourself and suffocate under the grain. Gray stood with her arms crossed, drumming up her fingers. Put up or shut up, Mr. Holmes, she said. Do you know where the body is or not? Put up or shut up, Mr. Holmes, is a really good sentence.
That's very good.
I'm still trying to work out. So, Holmes, all these characters have, like, existed in this universe because the realtor, like, was like, huh, those are three interesting names, but nobody like knows that everyone, like, the base level that creates is like everyone occasionally like is suspicious of it, but no one has said like, you're fucking Sherlock Holmes. right, like no. it's a very weird kind of limbo space. Everyone is like half suspicious of it, but no one has really fully grasped the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Holmes paused and took a deep breath. His delaying speech had worked. Olfactory adaptation was settling in, desensitizing him to nearby smells. In their place, he began to detect telltale molecules of cadaverine, putrescine, indole, and scatole. Scatole. I don't know.
Wait, he really is smelling out the dead body. He's
smelling out the dead body.
I was joking.
Faint and distant, but unmistakable, the scent of decomposing flesh. You called it. You called it straight up here.
Is this what Sherlock Holmes did? Did he go sniffing around for bodies?
Yeah, it mentioned earlier that, like, his, you know, his senses made him like a hound, right? Has James Patterson seen Sherlock Hound, the anime? Is that...
Maybe.
Holmes looked past the barn towards the uncultivated field behind it. Follow me. The team walked single file across the muddy furrows. Holmes first, then Gray, then the two cops, then Poe, then Marple, the only one in the posse wearing knee-high Wellington boots. As he walked, Holmes felt all the ancillary senses disappear. It was like wiping a film of vapor from a pair of glasses. Now everything was clear, painfully clear. His stomach started to turn as he honed in on the odor of death, and it triggered a curious sense of loss. He'd never met Sloane Stone, but he knew things about her that nobody else did, not even her partners. At the edge of the field was a mound of compost, 5 feet high and stretching 20 yards across the perimeter of the property. Holmes walked slowly down the row as the others trailed behind him. About 10 feet from the end of the mound, he stopped and pointed. "She's right here," he said. Gray glanced at Marple. "Is he sane?" "Not always," said Marple. "But he's usually right," added Poe. Gray turned to the two cops. "Tape it off, guys." Then she pulled out her phone and placed the call to CSU. That's the end of the chapter.
That's crazy.
The nose knows, I suppose.
Wow.
Very, very exciting stuff. All right. I'd love to read more, but my throat's kind of going. A lot of Holmes, a lot of exposition read this week. We finished fucking Catching Fire. How about that?
We did.
Do you think we go into Mockingjay next, or do we take a little detour between here and there?
Well, I do love to read about politics. Mm-hmm. But there's lots of political books we could read.
Mm-hmm.
So I say we take a little detour.
Mm-hmm.
And read about a truce, a political truce.
The truce at Bakura, perhaps.
Perhaps. Just a little planet called Bakura. And we'll see how that treats us, if that fulfills our appetite for politics.
A truce between dinosaurs and Jedi. I think that'll be a perfect palate cleanser between Catching Fire and Mockingjay. You think we'll do that one as maybe 2 or 3 episodes, like reading a bunch of chapters? Yeah.
Yeah, probably something like that.
Yeah. Well, we'll have more details on that soon. But for now, shall we take it to the close?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Our theme song is Hot McGonagall by Cheshire Moon. Huge thanks to them, as always, letting us use that as our theme song. You can find them on Bandcamp. And you can find us at patreon.com/shriekcast. And Liz, The Truce of Bakura is what we will be reading next. So until then, happy Hunger Games.
Happy Hunger Games.
Makes ocean roar seem tame. Better know what you're after if you catch her eye. 'Cause this hot mama is just a cat in disguise.